Welcome to SaaS Open Mic by Chartmogul. I'm Ed Shelley. Ghost may look like a typical SaaS blogging platform at first glance, but if you look a little closer, you'll see that things are pretty different. The company is a non-profit organization originally funded through Kickstarter and subsequently bootstrapped through to profitability. Ghost shares its financial metrics openly. You can see them at ghost.org/about. And the technology behind the platform is 100% open source. It's obvious that there's a strong, clear vision behind Ghost, one that I wanted to understand in more detail. So I spoke to founder and CEO, John O'Nolan, who started the company way back in 2012 after a single blog post outlining his idea went viral. I still remember reading this post at the time and the subsequent excitement in the tech community. In many ways, Ghost is an embodiment of John and his beliefs and philosophy on the future of journalism, something he really cares about deeply. The other part of the story, which is equally as captivating, revolves around John's aspiration for building a sustainable company with distributed employees and that supports his and his employees' goals of living around the world and leading a rich life while working on something he truly cares about. There's so much to learn from here, and I wish we had some more time to talk. But for now, enjoy my chat with John O'Nolan, founder and CEO of Ghost. If you like this founder story and want to get the next one as soon as it's available, don't forget to subscribe. You can do this on iTunes, SoundCloud, or your normal podcast reading app. It would really help us spread the word and the reach of this podcast if you do that, so thanks. John, it's great to be chatting to you. Thanks for joining me quickly on the podcast here. So let's get started. You are the founder and CEO of Ghost. Is that right?
That is right. And thank you for having me.
Where are you based right now, John? I know you move around a lot.
Right now I'm in Cape Town in South Africa. I've just got here 2 days ago. That's lovely so far.
Wow. That sounds great. And it's probably better weather than here. What do you think of the term digital nomad? I know it's a bit of a controversial term. Do you like using that name?
You know, I actually don't like that term very much, just because it's been bandied about so much now, and it's almost synonymous with people just kind of trying to follow the 4-hour work week guide and start a drop shipping e-commerce store. And there's a bit of a spammy community around it. So I usually just say remote worker. I think it's the closest.
So if my research is right, Ghost was actually kind of conceived through effectively a blog post in the beginning where you laid out the opportunity that you saw in the industry with publishing. And obviously this went on to get a lot of traction and then eventually a Kickstarter project. Is that right?
It is, yeah. So the background, even further back than that, just very briefly, was that my career has essentially been as a freelance web developer for a variety of clients. And usually throughout my history of work, I'd been building blogs and publications for people. And so that led to me working later for WordPress, which was the leading blogging platform at the time. And then through working on WordPress and with WordPress for many years, I kind of always had this itch in the back of my head of what would WordPress look like if you remade it today, but you made it simpler, you made it just focused on journalism and publishing, not all these other website builder features. And you left out all the kind of technical debt and all the cruft that had built up over the years. And I didn't think it was a good idea. So I just kind of, I refused to do it for the longest time because I thought it was too obvious. Like, who wants yet another blogging platform? So I kind of ignored it and repressed it. But at a certain point, I was so sick of having this idea going round and round in my head. I decided to kind of do a couple of mock-ups, just some simple designs, put them in a blog post, shove them on my personal website. And then if nothing else, at least I could be completely done with the idea and not have to think about it anymore. And that was kind of the beginning, as you rightly pointed out.
Yeah. I mean, I remember at the time seeing the post, and it seemed like it blew up fairly quickly. What was the gap between kind of publishing that and then realizing that you had something here that you needed to kind of jump on?
Yeah, so that was probably about 3 hours after the post went live, and I tweeted it to my account, which had a reasonable amount of followers, but it quickly got submitted to Hacker News, hit the number one slot, and as I say, about 3 hours after that, I was kind of getting tens of thousands of page views and similar numbers of emails. My inbox filled up pretty quick to an unmanageable level, and the overwhelming sentiment was, yeah, this shouldn't just be an idea. This should be a reality. You should actually build it. And it was overwhelmingly positive, far more than I ever expected. So pretty short period between just putting an idea out into the world and getting validation.
Yeah, sure. And obviously, platforms like Kickstarter really kind of enabled that kind of buzz and demand to be like converted into value. Was it really clear to you that was the way to do this?
It was for a couple of reasons. The one being it clearly worked well with that original blog post. And so after that blog post was published, and it had a kind of, if you want to find out more about this idea, put in your email address. So that amassed kind of 30,000 email addresses right off the bat. And so because that strategy had worked well for that audience initially, it was probably going to be a good one to repeat with a Kickstarter campaign. And then the other side of it was that Ghost is set up as a not-for-profit organization, which means the alternative means of capital are fairly limited. You can't take investors. There are no shareholders. Banks are surprisingly averse to giving loans to non-profit organizations for some reason. And so crowdfunding seemed like the most obvious, I guess, funding option for this type of project and this type of company.
Right. So you had the company there first, it sounds like, when you actually ran the Kickstarter campaign. One thing I really wanted to ask you about is like why nonprofit? Like there definitely seems like there's like a storyline there, and you have a vision and some goal that fits with a nonprofit business. Could you just kind of explain that?
Definitely, yeah. It's a couple of things that all kind of come together in harmony. So the first is probably the personal reason, which is for me, I've always, ever since I was about 19, I had this goal of becoming a millionaire and being very financially successful, and I wanted to do that by the time I was 26. And so that was always a young ambition that I'd had. But over the years, I've played this game in my head that I think we've all played at some point or another, imagining, you know, what if you won the lottery? What if you came into this huge amount of money? How would you spend it? What would you do? And in the beginning, that game is very fun and very easy. You know, you buy the Ferrari, you give your boss the finger, you fly to the other side of the world on your favorite private jet. I say favorite because obviously you have five. And stay in one of your many mansions. And then, you know, you buy all the Apple gear and all the everything else gear you could ever imagine. And then the game gets a little bit harder once you've bought all those obvious things. Then it's a case of, I don't know, start businesses, give money to charity, learn languages, travel the world. And then it gets very hard. Like, what do you want to do next if you've done all that? And essentially, what I came to the conclusion of was I could burn through. If I won the lottery or some ridiculous amount of money suddenly became mine, I figure I could burn through all of the things I'd ever thought about or lusted after within the space of about 2 or 3 years. But then what do you do after that? What do you do when you wake up and it's a Saturday morning and it's sunny outside and you still have, let's say optimistically, 50, 60 years left to live? What do you want to spend your time on, not your money on? And as I contemplated this for the millionth time, in 2012, beginning of 2012, sitting on a beach in the Philippines with some newly made friends watching the kite surfers out on the turquoise ocean, I realized I'd be doing exactly what I was doing then and what I still am doing now, which is traveling the world with financial freedom, being able to work on open source software, which I care deeply about and find to be a lot of fun, and would just that would be it. Like, I'd have enough money to live freely and work on things I cared about. And beyond that, I'd have the freedom to enjoy myself. Yeah. And that doing that and living that lifestyle did not require becoming a millionaire.
Yeah.
It required exactly what I had in 2012, which was a very modest freelance web developer salary. And by Silicon Valley standards, it would be a very low freelance web developer salary. Mm-hmm. And so the ambition of becoming a very kind of financially successful business person melted away quite quickly after that.
Okay.
And it opened up the way I was thinking about what I wanted to work on and what ideas I deemed to be good or bad in a very interesting way. So suddenly this idea that I'd had for ages of a blogging platform, which I thought was a stupid idea and could never be big, suddenly seemed viable, because no longer did I need it to make me a millionaire. I just needed it to be big enough to pay me a full-time salary. And that seems eminently possible.
Yeah.
So suddenly these obvious ideas that I'd had before and had rejected became things that I was interested in again. So that was the personal reason. The other side of the coin is it's a platform for journalists. One of the cornerstones of journalism is transparency and independence.
Yeah.
And a nonprofit organization free of the outside pressures of investors and shareholders seemed like a good model that fit clearly with what we were trying to achieve. And having seen a lot of kind of horrible politics go on in other open source projects, which mix a for-profit and a non-profit model, where there's always some kind of conflict of interest, I didn't really want to go down that route. I liked the idea of what if you could take this philosophy of trying not to become a millionaire and apply it to a company as well as to myself personally, and what would that look like? How would that affect the product development and the ideas and the way you treat customers if you did not have this overarching ambition to become very rich and sell to Facebook or Microsoft? So, yeah, lots of little perspectives that just made it feel like it would be a right thing to do and a fun thing to do.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think, like you said, that thinking process is something that so many people go through at a certain point in their life. It seems to me like you got far enough along in your thinking process that you were able to kind of not go from A to B to C, but just skip directly to C.
I think so, yeah.
Do you think, why do you think you got to that? Was it like really laying out, like thinking about these things in a concrete way and laying out a plan? Because most people don't ever make that jump, right? They think about these things, but they still chase the VC money and the big bang.
Definitely. I think a big part of that is the fallacy of always believing that the next level of financial success will buy some form of happiness that was heretofore unbeknownst to you. You know, we always think if you just had that much more money, then you'd be happier. But it's eminently untrue and disproved. You can look at all of the income stats, which say that I think the number is over $100,000 a year, you're happiness just absolutely plateaus. It completely flatlines.
Yeah.
So essentially, once you have the level of income required to be upper middle class by kind of Western standards, anything above that is just a more luxurious version of the same life, but you're not really doing anything more. And I think maybe to come to your question of how come I got to this conclusion where other people might not, I think travel probably played some influence in this. Something I'm exposed to and think about a lot with the amount of travel I do, and I have grown up traveling as well, so it's not like it's a new phenomenon, is seeing being in developing countries and seeing vastly different levels of income and poverty in some cases, and always comparing down as well as up. You know, it's very easy to always look at the Beverly Hills and the Hollywood and go, wow, comparing myself to these wealthy people and I have nothing. But I've arguably spent a lot more time around people of extremely low income backgrounds, comparing myself to them, going, wow, if they imagine my life, I'm no different to a Hollywood Beverly Hills person in this mansion of a house compared to their life.
Yeah.
And they must only dream of having what I have, and I don't even appreciate it, because we never appreciate what we have, right? Whatever we have is just the baseline.
Yeah.
It's what we take for granted and what's already there.
Yeah.
But forcing myself regularly to think that I'm pretty lucky to have what I already have, I think played a fairly big influence in just the way I always think through these problems.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
By no means to say I have all the answers, by the way. I don't want to sound like some kind of arrogant life guru. I know nothing about anything. I can only speak from my own personal experience.
Sure, sure. But I think that's also very valuable for a lot of people. So, yeah, it's really interesting. So we're fairly short of time. I want to jump forwards a little bit and look at kind of Ghost as it is today. What's your answer when people ask you what Ghost is and what your vision is for the platform?
Yeah, that's a great one. I say it's a professional publishing platform for journalists, and we're hoping to use technology to level the playing field with modern media and power some of the greatest journalism in the world.
Right. Has that changed in the last, it's nearly 5 years now, I guess. Is that something that's evolved a lot, or is that still really true to what you imagined at the beginning?
Still very much true. If anything, it's true now more than ever. The arguably the first few years of Ghost Life were kind of a step below that vision, just because we spent so much time getting those early building blocks in place. Creating the first version of the system, creating the platform, creating all the technologies and everything needed to power it. Took a tremendous amount of time, and just getting that base kind of publishing platform in place without even pursuing any larger vision was a huge focus early on. And in the last, I'd say, sort of 6 to 10 months, we've really reached this point of our technology having matured and really being able to look to a longer term strategy and vision for where we want to go. And that's incredibly heavily focused on journalism. That's what kind of gets us out of bed in the morning, is the notion of building technology to be used by modern media organizations and to help them create a more informed society, because that is ultimately the point of journalism, is to create a more informed society which is capable of making better decisions about governing itself. And obviously that filters into everything from what we buy to what we think to who we vote for. And I think if we can create a better media with a more informed society, then maybe we can get things moving in the right direction. So trying to create good technology to facilitate media organizations at a time when media organizations are hemorrhaging cash and stuff is what I care quite deeply about.
Okay. That's great. Obviously, Ghost is effectively a SaaS product, albeit like an open source one with a very quite like an atypical kind of background and story to it. But you have a subscription product that you bill for, like the hosting of Ghost, the platform. How did you go about kind of formulating that, and how you charge for this thing? Was that something that was immediately obvious to you, or have you gone through a lot of different iterations of Ghost, the product?
It was fairly straightforward model, based loosely on the managed hosting industry, which is fairly vibrant in the kind of WordPress community and the Drupal community. In a couple of these open source platform communities, you have managed hosts, which just specialize in hosting one particular kind of software, doing it really well, charging a premium for it because it's not shared hosting. And in all of the other open source community spaces, these are independent companies. They're not companies which are owned or run by the actual open source project itself. And so the idea that we had was simply to take the managed hosting model and make it official. So make it an official managed host for the platform, and then use that revenue to fund the further open source development of the app itself, which was at the time just a theory. That exact business model hadn't really been tried before, at least not that I'd ever heard of. But we hit profitability in 11 months. So it worked out pretty well.
Wow. That's great. One other thing that I think is really interesting is that recently you launched a new about page, which walks through a lot of the metrics of the business, like the core revenue metrics, and these are things that you make completely open and available to the public.
Yeah,
and obviously, like
as a metrics analytics business, like Chartmogul is, we're very interested in anything like that. And it's great that you've managed to use our platform to power the metrics on this page as well. What metrics are important to you for Ghost when it comes to kind of growing and optimizing the business?
Yeah, this is a great one. So it's changed a lot over the first few years, I would say. Early on, when we were just getting started and we had a limited amount of money in the bank, and we were not yet profitable, metrics were everything. It was life and death and sunrise to sunset. It was all that we kind of looked for, just to achieve that initial notion of sustainability, followed by that initial break-even point that would determine the long-term future of the business. So obviously monthly recurring revenue is the big one, which is a proxy for annual revenue, which kind of dictates how big payroll can be and how many people you can afford to have on staff. And then nowadays, as we've become a sustainable, profitable business, which is not, as a non-profit organization, not heading for any IPO, any exit, any acquisition, it's not targeting any huge windfall or even level of profitability, because we don't take any financial returns out of the business as founders. Now it's become more of a health metric. It's a way of checking in that everything in the business is okay. And we can tell kind of from our growth numbers, the overall happiness level of our customers, to put it slightly flippantly. So it's something that we track alongside our bigger picture goals and ambitions, which are what type of work we want to do and what level of quality we want to achieve and what type of impact we want to have. But sharing all of our numbers transparently and openly via our website is also very core to and very fundamental to our culture and what we stand for, which is, again, coming back to the idea of being a nonprofit, being about journalism, is having this integrity and this independence of saying, this is who we are, this is what we're doing, and we stand by it both in our company structure and in how much we're willing to share and be open about every detail of the business. And that's engendered a lot of trust and respect from the wider community, which to a level money can't buy. So I'm a big believer in transparency and openness.
Yeah. Okay. And I'd love to know quickly as well, just talking about Chartmogul specifically with the metrics, how Chartmogul, the platform, like, fits into what you do at Ghost. Is it something that is kind of is available to the whole company to really, like, democratize access to these metrics? Obviously, they're open to the public as well. How do you use the platform on a daily or weekly basis?
Yeah, so we have Chartmogul open to the whole team. Anyone can dive in to any of our metrics and dig around and see what's going on, which is great. We have had occasions where it was some engineer poking around who found a bug in our recovery email system, and turns out payment recovery emails hadn't been sent for a month or something.
Right.
And just by having it open to the whole team, we've often discovered interesting data anomalies which have led to discovering a bug or an optimization that's available. So yeah, the main app dashboard is available to the whole team. Then we use the Chartmogul API to create a public revenue graph. Also, we want to do more with that in the future. At the moment, it's quite a simple MRR graph. In future, we'd like to have kind of more detailed stats on kind of churn and lifetime value and potentially even cohorts of customers over time. But it's always a case of trying to focus on a few metrics that really matter and trying not to get carried away with focusing on every single piece of data, which is so hard because it's fun.
Yeah, I agree. And it's always, I mean, it's always great to see what people build with our API. And obviously your example here is one of the most interesting we've seen. So it's really, I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys do with that in the future.
Definitely, yeah. We want to make it even cooler, like live updating with WebSockets or something.
Yeah, sounds amazing. cool. So I just want to jump to one more topic, I guess, before we finish. And That's kind of around the notion of building a company that is completely 100% distributed, as I think, if I'm right, Ghost is. What are some kind of, I think a lot of people have the kind of idealistic view of growing a remote distributed team and a lot of the benefits that come with that. What are some kind of misconceptions from the point of view of somebody who's, I think, is doing it quite successfully?
I think, somewhat ironically, I think the biggest misconception is that it must be really hard. And it's actually not. I always say that remote work and having a remote team that's spread all over the world is 90% way easier than you would ever imagine it to be, and everything just kind of works. It's really not that different to all being in an office, because even in an office, most people are all talking to each other on Slack, or sending each other emails, or sending each other screenshots, or responding to GitHub issues. Like, there's a remarkable amount of work that gets done by people sitting in an office, which is just on a computer, agnostic of any particular location. So I say the biggest misconception is the majority of the work that we do as a software development organization, and is, it just works, it just happens. It's the type of thing that it's online by its very nature, and where you are makes zero difference. The remaining 10% is the tricky, needs like serious effort side of things. And that's very difficult to appreciate without having kind of experienced it firsthand. And it's all the soft stuff. It's the fact that you are not able to read facial cues, that you don't have body language, that you can't log on to Slack in the morning and notice that James is hungover in the corner. So maybe give him an hour before asking him about the bug that happened last night. Or that you can't see that Lucy is in a super good mood and has so much energy and is up for talking about new API ideas while making a coffee. You miss out on those little cues of knowing what context to have a conversation in, and you miss out on the random kind of water cooler moments of unplanned ephemeral conversations that just lead to great ideas. So to combat those, we have twice annual team retreats. So we get the whole team together somewhere in the world every 6 months. The last few were in Austria, Egypt, and Thailand, respectively. And we spend 10 days, usually in a big villa of some description, sometimes with a pool, and working a bit, but mainly just hanging out, mainly just getting to know each other. Because the more kind of inside jokes and stupid stories we can share on these trips, the more context it later adds to working remotely. So you know how, you know if Bill is being sarcastic or Sarah's making a joke. It adds this kind of extra layer of relationship that is otherwise missing.
Okay.
So that's my summary. It's 90% really, really, really easy. And the other 10% is forming connections with people takes more work.
Yeah. And when it comes to hiring, how do you find the right people, and how do you make sure that you have people that align with the values that you have for Ghost?
It tends to be quite easy. Saying that you're a company that's hiring and you can work anywhere you want and you'll get competitive pay equivalent to US startups with unlimited vacation and all your computer equipment paid for and twice annual international retreats tends to attract quite a lot of job applicants. So we really don't struggle on that front. But finding the right people, as you point out, is probably the more pertinent question. And from that point of view, I don't think there's a perfect answer. I don't think there's a silver bullet. What we do tend to do quite heavily is we don't spend a lot of time on interviews. If someone seems like they might be a good fit and we're excited about the potential of working with them, then we'll do usually a month-long, 2 to 4 week trial contract. Right. So depending on whether they're full-time employed, part-time employed, unemployed, depends on how many hours we get to work with that person. But we just work together on a test project and see how it goes and get a feel for actually working with that person on a real-life project that they would actually be working on if they took the job, as opposed to stupid quizzes about FizzBuzz and other ridiculous things, which are so dated that it baffles me completely that companies still use them for interview techniques. And we just find that's a far better way of getting to know someone over a longer period of time, doing a real piece of work, which is meaningful, tends to get better results, at least we've found.
No, that makes sense, definitely. Okay, final question then, I guess, from me is just kind of looking forwards a little bit. Obviously, in the last 6 to 12 months, journalism is definitely kind of a common topic in discussion and in the news itself. Like, looking forwards, how do you see Ghost kind of fitting into that storyline, and what's the outlook for you over the next kind of year or so?
Yeah, that's a great one. I think the single biggest way we hope to fit into that story and hope to make a difference is in the business model of modern news organizations. And right now we are at the tail end of what I would call the page view era, where all revenues, news organizations, has been driven by ad impressions, and ad impressions pay out based on page views. So all news organizations optimize for page views. They don't optimize for truth, for authenticity, for correctness, for reader relationships. They don't have reader relationships. They don't even know who their readers are. The only thing they optimize for is page views. So what's the result of that? You have clickbait headlines, you have vapid stories, you have people copying each other, and the single best way to make money as a news organization today is outrage. Publish something ridiculous, like that the biggest YouTube star is a Nazi, and watch the 50 billion page views roll in, and that's your revenue, which is what you desperately need, because there's almost no revenues to be had because Facebook and Google are taking it all. And so that has created this fake news era, this horrendous situation that we're in, because the only way news organizations get paid is through page views, and the only way to get page views is to kind of produce really low quality stuff. So what we're trying to come up with at Ghost is better ways for news organizations to make models, to make revenue, to have revenue models. And so we're very, very interested in kind of the bringing the SaaS type model to news organizations in a kind of Netflix, Spotify type manner, where you have members, you have subscriptions, you have long-term readers where you know who they are, you know what they've read, you cater your content around them, they do pay a monthly or a yearly subscription to that. And the technologies that facilitate creating that type of media business is what we're trying to create. And I think if we can have any kind of impact on getting good, real journalists paid, it will have a really, really positive knock-on effect on the subsequent quality of the journalism we start to see in the world. That's the hope.
Yeah, there's so much there that I would put a big, heavy underline, like being in the content space, I was kind of thrust into this space in the last kind of year or two, and it's changing so quickly, but at the same time it's not clear like where it's moving towards, and obviously I would maybe say that kind of journalism is kind of pioneering that space, and the content side of things seems to like almost follow behind. But it's, I think everybody's looking for the next thing, or the reset that puts us all back onto a more sustainable model for this type of content.
Definitely.
That was like I'm not sure that really made sense as a sentence, but yeah, I feel very strongly. I can't really say it better than you can, but, John, this has been really cool to chat, and now that you've got everybody kind of worked up and passionate about working for Ghost, where can people find out more about the company, and if they want to contribute, how can they do that?
Definitely, yeah. You can go to ghost.org to find out more about the company, /about if you want to see our lovely open revenue dashboard that we've talked about on this here podcast, and all of the lovely faces of the amazing team that I get to work with every day, and some of the details about what it's like to work for us. Me personally, probably easiest way to find me is on Twitter at John O'Nolan, or on my personal blog, john.onolan.org, where I publish blog posts as well as YouTube videos, Instagram photos, I mean all kinds of stuff really. I've just started a YouTube channel this year. It's a new thing I'm experimenting with. I'm very curious about where the whole video industry is going. So if you want to see me traveling and doing ridiculous things, well worth checking out. That's all linked from my blog.
Cool. Yeah, I have to admit, I watched one of your videos this morning already. So, and you got a subscribe from me. So,
Nice. That's good to hear.
Great. Awesome. Well, John, thanks so much again, and I wish you all the best with your travels and in the future with Ghost.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.